Researcher specializing in intelligence agency involvement in multiple assassinations, propaganda, and other global criminal operations in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Your listeners are extremely fortunate to have you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media,
Chuck O'Kelly.
September 30, 2020, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this indeed is the show you were looking for. Guess how I know that? Because you found it. Anyway, still do have a little bit of a cough. It may interrupt me on occasion here, but it is what it is on what they call Woden's Day, Wednesday, the middle of the week. Now, this is the time of the week that I usually try and do something different, and got to be honest with you, it was great timing that I happened to be able to catch a guy I used to do a show with called O'Kelly and the Greek. And I'm more than happy to sit down and have a discussion with him just about any time, because it's always a good time to see through the nonsense. And not everybody is acclimated to Greek speak. And we discover that incrementally, different time periods on YouTube for sure. When people discover the show that we used to do, comments still come in. I try not to pay much attention to them, but occasionally they do pile up a bit, and they range from the extremely disturbed, sort of upset, usual cesspool of commenting to, I'm so happy I found this. But anyway, it's always fascinating, always interesting to speak with the Greek, because I got to be honest, no matter how I see the world, which apparently is not like the other upright standing individuals that are called humans, the Greek sees it in a completely different way. And quite frankly, it's always a clarifying experience. So happy to have you along, Greek. I got to say, it is, it's been a little too long, I think, since the last time you and I spoke. I think it's what they used to call January. Now, I'm not sure about exactly what day it is, quite frankly, because there was something off in my calculations, and a few other people enjoyed this miscalculation along with me, trying to reckon what I would call, real time.
Well, lawful time.
Lawful time. Okay.
It happens to line up. Everything's lining up, like the Pope's work schedule. And lawful time, for example, noontime, I'm reckoning around the 30th day of the seventh month, like Septem means seven, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's lining up with the Pope's work schedule. I know, like, I'm an Old Testament kind of guy. I did Tabernacle this year, and it lined up with Maybon. I don't know if you're familiar with Druid festivals. I know this hardcore Druid guy, and I was telling him, today's the last great day. And he says, yeah, I know. And he says, it's Maybon. I said, really? So that's lining up.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, lawful versus unlawful, legal versus whatever. Why bother? Okay. All right. Where do we start?
Well, where do we start?
We start with a joke.
Okay.
You ready?
Sure.
Presidential debates. That's the joke.
There's
That's
the joke.
That, okay.
I knew the punchline this time, Greek. Isn't that amazing?
That is the punchline.
The punchline is just the thing itself. That's most of the planet, seems like, really. I've got to admit.
Lockstep. Yeah. You know, I've been talking about, legal and lawful. I'm not concerned with anything legal or illegal unless it's a sick bird, an ill eagle.
Mm, okay.
And about clarity, you have those that see and those that don't see or not see. Get it? Not see.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So anyway, I would suggest that the reality is to be judged on if it's real or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay. If I bring you a coin and I tell you this is a silver coin, you could take it on face value or what I say, or you can have it tested for its silver content, right?
Correct.
But they're both real. In other words, if you don't have it tested and it's a fake silver coin, it's still in reality a silver coin, you see. So
well,
a counterfeit bill,
mm-hmm.
A counterfeit and fake news is right. So reality must be tested.
Correct.
Right. So when we test it, proof it, we come up with something very different. As a matter of fact, the results of proofing – something cannot be relayed back to the Nazis, mm-hmm. you know, than people who don't Nazi, right? Because the information gap that is created by simply providing the information of the proof is so large and so discrepant to what they're used to that it doesn't make any sense. And thus, the proofing is irrelevant to those that don't see. I think we've said, by the way, go back to the Ocelli and the Greek stuff. That's right. Probably the best reference stuff for introduction to Greek speak. Mm-hmm. And pick up those topics and what we've talked about. By the way, there's a website done by someone else called right. Greek Speak. It's a EEEE, right? Speak spelled with double E, .com, just GreekSpeak.com. And if you want to get in touch with me personally, I have the DormantUncommonRadio.com website. The only thing you can activate there is the email. So that's my own personal, and it's not active for various reasons, even though it's a pretty kick-ass domain. So, where do we go from here?
Well,
where
okay.
Where we've been.
Couple things. Where we've been, right. So I want to go back over something you just said. I advise people to go ahead if you can access, the archives are available out there for sure. I know there's somebody out there trying to sell them, but, they are available for free if you look. Anyway, So you could go back to those shows we did, but something you just said is very interesting to me about this ability to see and not see. It's relevant to the time for sure. I have noticed that the information gap is not something that is static. It is widening. And
it's fluid.
Yeah. Well, see, but I am noticing the increase in the gap. Okay. So that's where I'm going with this. There may at some point be a contraction. Okay. But I can only talk to you about what I'm observing. Right. And the fact is this gap is growing. It is growing in dimension in my mind. Why? Now I question whether it is a linguistic issue. And if there is a failure to communicate because the communication is confounded, or if we are seeing, because it seemed to me like we had a moment, more than a moment really, but a period of time where that gap wasn't widening. In fact, it seemed as though all of a sudden people had awareness of things around them for a little while. It was very brief, not like what you and I were talking about when things would come together and people would understand everything quite well on this rock. Okay, not like that, but a very brief time period where it seemed as though, you know, the comprehension, if you will, was, you know, actually elevating a bit. And that
okay,
is
so
absolutely gone.
Okay, so I'm
going to
cut
gone.
You off for a second. That mm-hmm. must have been the last time they got hit by an asteroid, because short of that, I can't see it.
Well, look,
we've discussed,
it may
by the way, the cosmic censorship, which mm-hmm. is beyond that. In other words, they're shut down by a cosmic divine force, which is the shutdown. So, but yeah, go ahead. I get what you're seeing. To cut to the chase, do you have a temporal data on when that happened? Do you think was it a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago? When
I would say it was about 4 years ago, and I did not take note of it. Until recently, because of the tremendous contrast, it was almost indiscernible, like as if, let's just imagine for a second, we think about the cosmic censorship as a computer program. For a little while, the program was not fully functional, it seemed like, about 4 years ago. But now it has not only been updated, and repaired, but incrementally appears to be growing more intense, because I see a failure of communication here on the most simple of levels that used to be a given. I have troubles, quite frankly, having
okay.
conversations.
Well, maybe I could help. Maybe I yeah. could help you out. What you're trying to say, what I'm getting.
Please.
What I've been talking about timekeeping is around 1998, which was the beginning of the seventh millennium, but with a five-year grace period, let's say 2003 on the Pope's work schedule, till about the early 2030s or less. You know, when I say early 2030s, I'm talking 31, 32, 33. You're going to have 1,000 years of events in human history compressed into that time period of about 40 years. Let me just say that again. a 1,000 years of human events compressed into a time of about 40 years. So it's very concentrated. So you don't have time to think, time to perceive. You just have time to what? Go along. Mm. Now, that doesn't mean get along. That just means go along. But nonetheless, I would suggest that the nature of our existence as humans, as we've talked about external input, is voluntary. Not because we're here, we volunteered to be here, but because the without talking about the Greek fates, you know, the goddesses, right?
Right.
The aspect of fate in many cases has many branches and is voluntary. Like, I think the last time we spoke, maybe two of the last times we spoke, I said the number one priority of the every administrative government in the world is population reduction. Mm-hmm. And how do you get rid of the majority of the people in the world and have those that are remaining be compliant and willing to go along with what's next? Well, what's interesting is that in most countries, especially the West, 40 to 75% of the people, the general population at large, is willing to take an injection voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean.
Yes.
Voluntarily. So why do you think in the U.S. they're not taking the guns away? Because it doesn't take much to take a simpleton human to convince him to go out and shoot his neighbor, you see. So what I suggest is when you compress this time parallel to what this time actually represents, don't try to make sense of it. So if you do explain or proof what's going on, it won't make sense on any rational comparative basis that you can compare it to other things because it's unique in that way. But if you do understand how these things go by what's called the ancient prophecies and also just rational thinking and studying reference material, which we might want to talk about, not the reference material, but what is referenced and is contrary,
mm-hmm.
you'll see that it's pretty easy to do. And it's also once you realize you're being censored cosmically, now you know what you can focus on chipping away at.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I've been trying to do with Greek speak. And that's why, like, for example, I don't go out and do stuff, even though I recently did a Freeman interview by request and the website is dormant, is because, the reality as proofed will not make any sense.
Mm. No, look, I understand, where you're going here, but this is interesting because you're actually bringing up some questions. Now, I've gotten questions from listeners recently.
Okay.
And by recently, I mean over the past few months. actually, all during this year, since the last time you were on. And again, you know, noted on the Pope's work schedule, that would be sometime in January. So, since then, I've been getting questions, one by one, here and there, related to current events and, you know, what is the connection. And I never attempt to speak on your behalf, you understand. I've always said I will attempt to bring him on and see if he'll answer the question.
Let me interrupt for a second. The mm-hmm. lazy way, which is actually the right way, is just refer him back to the Sonics, and they're not shows. They're Sonic events
mm-hmm.
That we did with Ocelli and other things because I've answered everything already.
Well, see, that's
not
the thing.
Not that I know everything, but I know enough that I could answer everything that's asked by most of these people.
So. Well, that's usually my first step is to say, have you listened to all of the material?
Right.
And, you know, because some of the questions I know very well, I can reference straight from those discussions and that's the end of it. But I think there is, new questions here because they're seeing things as new events and it's kind of funny because they are really just old events. These are things that we've been taught about, you know, since we were children in one form or another. And quite frankly, the fact that it is here, I'm yawning. This is not a surprise. Okay, even in the very dumbed down version of hate to do this, but what they teach you in the organized Christian faiths, which I'm well acquainted with, you have a very dumbed down version of this. Every Bible is a children's Bible, basically, to you. All right, and these ideas that you know at a certain point. There would be this problem with linguistics I was talking about, was already something that's been done before. The fact that there is a disease, now I don't know if it's a virus, but of course people wanted to ask you about that. because we talked about viruses on this show, you know, the show we used to do, the Sonic events that we used to other people could partake of. You know, it seems strange to me, but a lot of people think that this COVID-19 thing is something new.
And well, it is. It is. COVID is COVID stands for Certificate of Vaccine ID. Mm-hmm. It's like it's an addendum to the real ID, and it was implemented privately in 2019. That's what COVID stands for. It's you can't catch COVID-19 anymore. You could catch a birth certificate or driver's license or, you know, a gun license or something. Mm-hmm. The coronavirus we've discussed before. Let's just warm up on the topic. You ever hear someone say, like, this food is high in cholesterol?
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. Cholesterol is something the body produces under certain conditions. Right. There's no food that has any cholesterol in it. It is not believable that you can catch a virus as such, because all of the reference documents since the beginning where and all the way through all the postulates and research that has been done on it, it is something that forms in the body, just like all the other things that can be observed in blood and lymphatic system. Mm-hmm. It is something that forms when the body's under extreme stress, physical and emotional, is exposed to toxins, and is exposed to high levels of electromagnetic radiation and high levels of ionizing radiation, mm-hmm. the latter being nuclear, let's say, events, right? So you can't catch a virus from someone any more than you can catch cholesterol from food or a red blood cell from someone. And they are not the cause of disease, and they just seem to be present more often than not within people that have a certain classified disease. Let me just say, language is coded, right, as in a code. Sometimes the code is so obscured that they jump a little too far too fast. Like, okay, you're the blind JFK researcher, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it or not true that in Malaysia, Australia, New Zealand, they had published in newspapers that Oswald shot Kennedy about 6 to 8 hours before it happened?
Well, the actual event, no. But what they did have instantaneously was an entire background on Lee Harvey Oswald and stuff,
right,
like that, that was able to be printed immediately. Now, I'm being very careful about this. In a time in which you could not transfer files instantaneously as we know them today, they had what would amount to the ability to do that,
okay,
based on what was published. And the amount of time it took to go to press and actually produce a newspaper and everything else is also remarkable, because it seems as though information was instantaneously spread throughout the globe, or it was already in the hands of the publishers before the event. That is the only two conclusions one could come to based on the timing that it was produced. Now, I'm being very specific about this.
Sure. You don't want to give it any – maybe I was too liberal with that. In other words, there are signs of foreknowledge.
Yes.
Okay. Like, for example, everybody knows that 19 Arabs with box cutters don't vaporize towers, no matter what they fly into the tower, right?
Right.
You could look at just about everything that's put out. Like, how many times have you heard, like, a financial collapse? Well, it's a credit-based economy. It's all credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how can you have a financial collapse in a credit-based economy? Because it's credit. Right.
Well, I know do it. If the credit holders, the people who control the system,
right,
of credit,
your access to credit.
Yeah, they deny your access to it. Well, you have a collapse, don't you?
Right. I was explaining to someone, and they actually did a little forensic work on it. And they went about three quarters of the way, but that was enough. Recently, they did a trillion, 2 trillion, whatever stimulus, where they sent everyone $1,200, right?
Oh,
a check.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I said that they don't have $2 trillion or $100 trillion or $5 or anything to send anyone. When they send you the check, you're going to sign it. And when you sign it under various monetary acts, that $1,200 appears.
Right.
But it appears at a rate of 10 to 1. So 12,000 appears. They give you the 1,200, right? So there's 10,800, whatever, left over. The bank gets a third of that, and the rest of it, the other 7,000 or 8,000, goes to the feds or the people that allow the system to work that way. So they don't have anything to give you. They approve the funding of that, but they don't have anything. You go to the Treasury or wherever, Federal Reserve, whatever you want to call it, and say, let me see the money you've got. They have nothing. The banks, the gold, silver, heroin, and all the other stuff they use is just commodities. So this is very easy to discover. Actually, you could look up, any financial institution, not what's being taught about them or reported about them, but their own information tells you that no one has any money. It's all credit. So this goes on and on and on. But I had done on the Greek speak, I think a week into the corona thing, and I said, well, it was really funny how the Federal Reserve reacted on this before anyone else, right? So it's a Federal Reserve virus, if you want to be more literal. As in a technological term, virus, when you throw a virus into the computer or something technological. Now, what's happening is, see, I've discussed this not in length, but, you know, as humans, we make tools. And the reason we make tools is because we want to develop or further certain techniques. So when you hear about technology, you notice people don't talk about technique anymore. But the idea of technique and technology, the T-E-C-K part, is almost the same word. Technos. It's a Greek term. So when you develop a certain technique and you want to further it, you might need better tools, and then you focus on making better tools. But when you forget about the technique and you just focus on the tools, now you forget why you're making the tools, you see?
Of course.
So this is where you're at right now. There's no more technique. It's just blatant with technology. So technology in a sense that the tools have taken over. So – yeah, and the interesting thing is how this is still a secret. You know, I recently speak to people in public, and they say you should write a book. And I say, well, anyone who writes a book is presuming that whoever is going to read that said book has reading comprehension, right? Why would you write a book if you knew, not presume, but you actually knew that people lack reading comprehension? It would be a waste of time, right? So this is what's going on. It's the same thing. In other words, you don't have any money because it's a waste of time to have real – you don't have any law because it's a waste of time. Look, I've spoken – speaking of law, they had that lady pass away recently, and she's gone public, that Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg. They asked her about her job, what it's like to be a justice. She goes, oh, all I do is work with bar members. That's my job. Now, the Bar Association has nothing to do with law, right? It's right, if they have the appearance of it. So – You go to a priest or a rabbi, and you know, you show them the book that their religion's supposed to be based on, and say, we don't go by that. We go by our church or temple traditions, right?
Well, and those traditions are developed through a society, which is, you know, here it is. You have a legal society, in air quotes.
Well, they're developed for a society to accommodate the people,
right?
For example, if you landed on an island or a planet full of savages and barbarians, is it easier to change them over into being civilized, or is it easier to find out what they usually need and make it and sell it to them? Right? The second part. Find out what barbarians are into, and you just manufacture and sell it to them. Well, you know, they're ready to go, right?
No, I understand, so, and that ties right to the thing you said about guns before, because it's pretty interesting. I constantly am confronted here in the alleged state of Georgia with people who tell me that, you know, there's those people who want to take your guns, and I keep trying to tell them, relax, nobody wants to take your guns, actually. You are useful with a gun.
Right.
And I now am armed, by the way, but it's only because I do not trust the thought processes of those around me. So for defensive reasons, something I had never done regularly, once I stopped being a criminal as a kid, I actually have, you know, possession of a firearm, of a few of them. This is not normal for me, but you know how it is. If you are, you know, in Rome, you do as the Romans do, and it's best that you do sometimes, because that's the only way you're going to be able to defend yourself against the nonsense which may come your way.
Well, you have to remember, okay, captivity. All right. When you look at animal statistics, for example, a stray cat, a stray dog, average life 2 to 4 years, right?
Okay.
But we know that if you have a pet dog or a pet cat, and if you just pet them, love them, and feed them, and got a water bowl, they're going to live between 8 and 14 years.
Right.
right? So you hear about people only lived to 25 or 40 years ago. It wasn't because of distress, health, and other things like that, or disease. It was because they tried to live lawfully with honor and dignity. So if someone insulted someone, that was usually a death offense. And if you dueled to settle that insult, the survivor then would be chased down by the surviving family, and then they would die. See, so it was very – so in other words, I asked people, I said, how many times have you been insulted or have you insulted someone by the age of 21? Mm. Many times. And, well, each time that happened, that was a potential life-threatening experience. Do you know that in ancient times or even up until you see the Westerns? How many times have you seen in 19th century America movies, which are accurate in this sense – guys insult each other in the bar, they step outside, they have a duel, and the sheriff is standing right there. It doesn't do anything, right?
Well, you and I have both lived in the New York, New Jersey area, right? And fact is, only 30 years ago, you could handle things by, you know what, we're going to deal with this, and you could potentially die in a fist fight. That was normal at one point.
Not if the state agencies were present. See, now you're under captivity. I think I've gone... on several things, I've gone over how the what's called America, the United States of America, got into this mess with the Civil War. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. You know, the world is run by secret societies, which are societies that keep secrets. And they're not necessarily the Freemasons and Knights Templars, but the Freemasons and Knights Templars were involved in this. Freemasons went to Lincoln and said, you have a country here that could potentially feed and provide resources for the entire world mm-hmm. as we know it. Do you know what you're sitting on? And he's like, no, you know, I'm just an attorney from Kentucky. And he says, well, we'll show you how to do it. And the Knights Templars backed up the southern states with very advanced armaments and artillery. If you study the inventions of certain weapons that are still considered modern, were advanced by the South, right? Mm-hmm. They were superior militarily by every means. So they basically got the federal, Lincoln was sitting on, to instigate a war, right? So all of a sudden, one night, a fort blows up, and it was a fort that wasn't really populated, and that was the cause of the war. The South was far more superior, but there were, of course, the plan was not for any South, the South or the North to win. The plan was to create enough chaos and decimation that you can create a central government that'll spread out and maintain order through chaos, you see. Mm-hmm. So once they subverted the South internally, then they approached Lincoln again, and they had already figured out he's too much of a simpleton to understand what to do. They had to get rid of him. So they got rid of him, and then you had the incorporation of the government, and that was done deliberately in 1871. Then you brought in the mystical side, which was, even if you look up the Department of Justice, it's known as a historical anomaly, even in mainstream circles. You could look it up right now on a Google search, the Department of Justice history. All the historians call it a historical anomaly because no one knows who started it or where it came from. Ha, ha, ha. And then after that came all the intelligence agencies and all that. That's when they put in the justice, you know, the ancient goddess, because the Freemasons, Templars, whatever, they always – every occupying force or power base always puts in their religion as well, right?
Well, and to hint at something that I know you're not going to speak about publicly, but I will hint at it and see what you have to say anyway. All of the blood spilled on this land during that time was more than just the result of a conflict. It was actually a ritualistic behavior,
right,
that was part of the, let's call it, the esoteric nature of what was being put into place. I think people fail to recognize that, you know, we talk about it, you know, the Battle of Gettysburg and how many Americans died, and, you know, more people died during this than any. Okay, but for a reason. This was done.
Well, if you draw lines between all those points, you form pentagrams, right?
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And I don't think a lot of people see that on their maps, quite honestly, but that is a reality that I don't see any historian, anybody who's looking at this, not even the most alternative of individuals, not even the I hate to say this, not even the Jordan Maxwells will touch that.
if you have more than five people listening, you're probably not going deep enough. But here's the thing also, Chuck. Blood is the currency of the gods, plural, the plural gods, even the Most High God. It was, you know, he sacrificed his own son, which no matter how you look at it, it's human sacrifice. Well, his son as a human, in human form, let's say. But and also told Abraham to bring a sacrifice of his son, which was normal. He didn't complain, right?
Well, the biblical text is loaded with the concept of a human sacrifice, actually. Right.
Right. And yeah. Because blood is the currency of the gods, and the level of the higher the order, higher order beings, blood is of higher value. So one thing that people don't understand is, you know, again, proper divine economics. Mm-hmm. Right. So that would go under divine economics. The other thing is the ability to procreate in children themselves, because they represent the fruit mm-hmm. of the seed. So we've gone over that, I think, before. That's why you have all of the most important in the occult, the most important part of the human body is not the brain, but the sexual organs, because without the sexual organs, the human race is finished in one generation. And you see, that's why you have all the gynic and phallic symbols. Mm-hmm. It's even in scripture. There's one, I think, in one of the later New Testament, he says there are organs in the body that are more important than others. Right? I think it was Shaul or Paul that said that, meaning without procreation. In other words, look at one. What's the big complaint about GMO crops? That you can't get seeds, right?
Right.
What's wrong with that? Well, you're going to eat this year, but you're not going to eat ever again.
Right.
So, okay. So, divine economics. That's something you could do on another. Ocelli and someone else, and do divine economics. Maybe we never did one like that, but.
No, but it would be useful. I'm just, you know, throwing out the hint at this, that this is something that could be understood if one wanted to explore it. The material
it still
is available. I'm just saying this is not hidden knowledge, really. It's just not pronounced. It's not out front. You're not going to find it easily, but there is very much something to the idea that blood is currency. And I think that is something that is worthy
for
of
the
exploration.
Gods, right.
For the gods, yes.
Yeah, and when you're going down that road, again, because of the state religions, I think on the last time we spoke about Islam is not what people think.
Right.
Right? The Islam that was practiced 150 years ago was based on Torah. Mm-hmm. The current Islamic world is based on the Mohammedan Anglo treaties that were done in the 19th century, the Sharia law and all that extremism and all that stuff. And another thing we haven't discussed is that Islam was created to block Christianity from spreading because it was the same time that the Crusades were going on, 7th century, 6th century. And they didn't want – because it was very well known that Christianity was a state religion to subdue and dumb down people, right? Mm-hmm. So it was a good thing to block it at that point. But then it, of course, got co-opted. As you see today, or in the 19th century, you haven't missed anything. So all of the, you know, if you look at the Bon religion of the East, you know, like you have all these Westerners that are, you know, they look at Judeo-Christian ethics and Islam and they say, oh, I want to go with the Hindu stuff, right? The Buddhist stuff. And they mm-hmm. get into that. That's the same thing. It's a co-op that it's a very recent, the current Buddhism, Hindu practices are again co-opted. They're not their religion is really the Bon religion, Bon, depending on where you are. So you have no choice at this point but to become academic in stature, not an academic, but academic in stature, meaning you're going to have to know what you're getting into based on what was written about it in earnest before you came to this planet.
Right. Right. No, there is a need to separate the concept of what people generally consider as academic from what you're talking about. It's not about the degree.
Right. I don't being a member of an academy or having a degree. That is absolutely ridiculous. Right. You know, I catch every professor. I've spoken to hundreds of professors in the past two decades. And every one, I catch them with their pants down. Some of them literally, believe it or not, some of the cute ones years ago.
Nice.
But I always say, you know, the American education system has been is in shambles and it's irreparable. It can't mean you can't fix it. Mm-hmm. And any education really past the sixth or the eighth grade is useless. And they all say, yeah, pretty much. And they're college professors. So then I said, Oh, and they catch themselves, right? They catch. I said, so what happens? They graduate from 12th grade as illiterates, and they go to your school and your class, and all of a sudden they're magically – you spray some pixie dust on them, and they're magically competent?
Good luck with that, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't work. I wanted to go touch back to why the pandemic or this whole corona thing was done now.
Well, see, that's the key because, again – I do see this. This is an interesting concept because the idea of compression, where we have a lot of events occurring simultaneously.
Well, by the way, you won't notice that there's this compression until around the 2021 and a half. Remember we were doing this in 2017, 2016, 2015?
Yes.
And I said that this around 2018, the spring, it's going to start, but it won't really be defined by, 3.5 years, which would be 2021 and a half in the summer of 2021. But as it gets closer to that point, it will define it.
Well, and that's the weird thing because I am noticing some of these things being signaled before they arrive. It's not because, I'm a soothsayer, okay? The signs are obvious. It appears to me.
Well, what's not obvious is how they're going to do it, but what they want to do is obvious.
Yes, exactly. Which is why I say, as we approach only days away from this, event that's going to occur here in the United States where you have this selection process, which is not an election, although.
It doesn't matter. I wish they would get away from all that and you could do it digitally like 1984. It's purely ceremonial.
Yeah.
Whether you have what they call a republic, a democracy, which it's not either, or a dictatorship or whatever they have in Iran, all of that is ceremonial.
Mm-hmm.
None of that. In other words, if you've ever seen the person or heard them, they're not in power. They have the power as a corporate official. In other words, the president would be like the manager of a restaurant chain.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And your local officials and the state, the governors would be like the waiter or the waitress. They have certain leeway. Yeah, they could kick you out, but it's not their restaurant. They could be hired and fired at any time. They're not in power. If you sued Taco Bell or Kentucky Fried Chicken, you're going to get PepsiCo attorneys.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
No, of course, because it is not necessarily the front name. It is not the front people that you get to deal with that are actually in charge of the thing itself. At the end of the day.
But here's the thing. Around the 2025-2027 period, it will be very clear what I just said. Mm-hmm. The PepsiCo attorneys will let you know that it's all owned by Pep. You see what I mean? You're going to have a one-world leadership by default. In other words, without talking about the pandemic and all that, if you don't wear a mask, they give you a fine. And if you look at the ticket, it says public health code, whatever. It's not because you didn't wear a mask. It's just some various sundry code because the law enforcement doesn't know any law. They have a little crib sheet, a little book, and they look through it. What are we going to put on the site you with which violation? That's mm-hmm. all, right?
Right.
They don't know what's going on and they don't want to know because they get what's called a paycheck, right? Which is not payment, but it's just a paycheck. So this goes all the way from the guy on the street, I call them pawns or grunts or whatever, all the way up to the people that are exposed, which are making fools of themselves. So if you remember, meaning like if you look at, for example, the major fools are like the governor of California, New York, they're all getting big criticism, right, from their own a constituents, let's say. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to say is if we harken back a few years and I kept saying there's going to be a Middle East Union, and in order for this to relegate a central world power, you're going to have to raise the Middle East into a higher civilized factor than it is now, and you're going to lower the Western world into a lower civilized factor so they kind of even out. Right.
Well, does this sham? I this is one of the questions because you're talking about this right now. I want to enter it. I'm sorry to interrupt, but here's the thing. You know that recent sham of a peace deal that was had there between Israel and the UAE, which is another fabrication of various other countries. If you don't believe me, by the way, one of the countries was the first to put the image of John F. Kennedy on a silver dollar. That was Sharjah. It wasn't a silver dollar, but it was a big silver coin. I think it was 5 rupees. But anyway, Sharjah is now part of the UAE. But that business deal right there, somebody did ask if the Greek thought that that was the beginning of this formation that'll be.
Not yet. It's going to be very fast when it happens. Literally, it's kind of like, you know, an Independence Day where they wake up one morning and all the ships are there, right? But they were detected weeks before.
Right.
Okay, kind of thing. I mean, that's just, I'm using film analogies because they, you know, they tend to be up front in people's conscious.
Right.
This is another thing I'm going to say. You have a small group of people or organizations that run everything. There are no national enemies. In other words, Iran is not an enemy of the U.S., and Iran is not an enemy of Israel. North Korea is not an enemy of anyone. I mean, look, the Americans, what, they couldn't get the Americans off of Cuba, Guantanamo Bay? Come on. They're all good friends. Like, and I was very cautious and reserved once. I was out in the West Coast in a meeting, and there was a member that were of the Persian or the Iranian mob. I wouldn't say he's very high ranking, but he was high ranking, and a member of the Mossad, pretty high ranking. Mm-hmm. And they work with the Yakuza in Japan. And I said, Israel and Iran are not enemies, are they? They started laughing their ass off.
Right.
You know, of course, because it's the underworld. You know, you can get rid of the government, but the underworld, it's the underworld that runs it. So nonetheless, there are no enemies. Whenever they tell you you have an enemy like China or whatever, it's there were no enemies since the 19th century. So what was World War II, Greek? Well, you go figure that one out. We just talked about what battlefields and blood mean.
Right.
So what I would suggest is when this Middle East Union comes about, you will have animosity, a genuine animosity is developing, and it's going to be very different because one of the things that I haven't touted as I should have, maybe I'll start doing it now with you here. Mm-hmm. What is going to empower at least the Middle East, what is going to empower this loose confederacy of nations, what I call the Middle East Union, that's coming around 2025 and beyond, with let's say everyone else is conscious, focused on what's going on in the Middle East and almost taking orders directly and indirectly from the leadership there, is that the people are going to be so fed up with their lives. In other words, how things have been going, meaning also from what they understand from history and religion, that they're going to be asking in unison for divine help. Mm-hmm. Right? And the people, the group that is going to be, let's say, usurping the position in the Middle East will offer it, and the people will go for it. Mm-hmm. You see, I don't know how more clear to make it. Because, you know, even the most staunch atheist on their deathbed, how many times have you heard they cry out to a god, right, on their deathbed usually? They'll profess atheism their whole life, but they ask God for help. You know, like there are no atheists in a what do they call the military when you're in the hole in the ground?
Oh, yeah, there's no atheists in a foxhole, yeah.
Right, yeah, the same thing. There's no atheist on their deathbed. You see, this is how the population is going to be. But I brought up the shameful administrators, you know, how, like, if you read about Cuomo, de Blasio, all these other people, Newsom or whatever, these governors are being touted as, you know, being bizarre and whatever. That is going to shame, and also with Trump and all these other guys, I call them Chump and Puta, you know, Putin, anyway, if you know what Puta means.
Yeah, gotcha.
But in Spanish. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, Chump and Puta, all these other people, they're not leaders, they're managers at a Taco Bell, but the manager at the Taco Bell could have you arrested, can he not?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah, okay. And then put into a cage, you know, which is basically prisons. You know, no one has been in prison legally or lawfully in the past 80 years, right? They're all there for other reasons. Mm-hmm. And there's not an attorney general in the world that will deny what I just said in private, but publicly say other things. How do I know? Because I've spoken to plenty of them about it. You even had, I don't know if you remember, Justice Bork in the 80s. Mm-hmm. One of the congressmen were asking him, if you're made justice, the Supreme Court, what are you going to do about the growing prison population? What did he say? I'm not going to do anything because everyone in prison's volunteered to be there, right? And they cut it right there, right? Well, what do you mean I volunteered? So
it's true.
Yeah, and it's more than you think. It's pretty bad. It's a religious system. It's theocracy. So here's the point. If you have all these leaders that are shamed, how easy is it, you see, to bring – so you bring – okay, when you have discerning levels, okay, meaning like a step, something that looks like something is higher or lower than the other thing, well, you have to bring – the higher one down and you have to raise the lower one up, right? And then if you could have the lower one be the high one if you take the high one and lower it a lot, right? Mm-hmm. If you have something that's tall and something that's short, if you just address the tall one and reduce it to one-tenth its height, then the one that was previously short next to it will tower over it without even making any adjustments to it, you see?
Right.
So what I'm saying is you're going to have the Western society brought down and the people that are pretty much look like they're packing dust in the Middle East are going to be brought up, which is very easy to do with construction and trade practices these days. In other words, the way cities are built right now, you can have a metropolis built in less than a year and a half anywhere in the world, right?
Right.
So be on the watch, but this is not until the 2025. But what I'm saying is that this raising the Middle East and lowering the West will be very evident by what you call 2021 by the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
You notice I say back in 2015, I'm saying the same stuff. It's back. It's on track. You see?
No, it is. I would say that one thing that we did not cover, though, at that time. Is something. Now here's what I take notice of. It's not a listener question. I've got a couple more of those, by the way. One of them is, by your reckoning, what year are we actually in? Because they've adjusted their idea of time. And
well, lawfully, okay, well,
lawfully, what year are we in? Yeah.
Adam was the one that everyone keeps time by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the year 6000 was 1998. So it would be, you know, since the year counting is now, it's the year 6023, roughly. But I would say 6022 because if you go to the Gregorian calendar, remember they shot it back a year, like George Washington has two birthdays, right? 1722 and 1721, right?
Well,
if you look that up.
And also,
actually,
if you,
during the break, look that up.
No, yeah. And if you attempt to have a conversation about birthdays with someone from the Middle East, enjoy that because they don't have the same concept of when to count, because do you count from one? Seriously,
right, because the day you're born, you're in your first year. So on your birthday, you're the next year, right?
Right. So honestly, there's a 1 year differential between the way people in the Middle East count a birthday and the way that we would count a birthday.
Well, here's an example. I'm 55, but I'm in my sixth decade, because when I became 51, I'm in my sixth decade. Right.
Right. Okay.
So when I tell people, so how old are you? I'm in my sixth decade. They think it's 60 because they're not listening. I'm in my first century. So are you.
Oh, absolutely. I'm 48. So really.
You're within that first century. In other words, you're still chomping away at anything a century offers. So when you're born, you're in your first year because even though you're alive for a day or two, you're chomping away at that first year.
Right.
As soon as that year is complete, now you're chomping away at the second year. So you're actually in your second year. Right?
No, I understand. That's why I'm in my fifth decade, but I'm 48.
That's right.
Yeah, I understand this. No, I don't have a problem with it. I'm just saying that there is a different way of reckoning.
Oh, no. You have to look at what they, you know, like, for example, even today, when I watch something on television, you'll have a host and a guest. You know how they sit back at a night show and they swing, they cross their leg and they show the bottom of their shoe, their sole?
Yeah.
That would be censored in the Middle East. You cannot show, or in other words, showing the bottom of your foot or the sole of your shoe on the Middle East television is akin to showing the middle finger in Western.
Which they blur out here mostly. So,
right, and they would blur that out, or they would edit it or change the aspect ratio so it would raise above that. You see, so when you look at how they keep time, or then now we're getting into the customs. But mathematically, or arithmetically, it is correct to say that you're in your fifth decade, I'm in my sixth decade, or when you're born, you're in your first year, arithmetically. Mathematically, it's different. You know the difference arithmetic and mathematics. Arithmetic is counting, like stuff you use in commerce, but mathematics is a fiction, like legal or whatever, right?
Right, right. I understand.
And that, when you create, like they say, black holes exist because we have the equations.
Well, mathematics are subject to customary changes. Arithmetic is arithmetic.
Right, and they could tell you this equation proves it, even though it hasn't been solved or can't be solved. If welcome to Einstein.
Yeah, well, there's that crap too. But anyway.
yes, the big anyway with a capital N, yes.
Yeah, well, listen, I got to do that because, I mean, you move so quickly that I've got to catch up here and there and stop for a second to figure out where to pivot to. Because there's a lot of information actually contained in this conversation already, even though it's
You're just not used to a dummy load free conversation. That's all, Chuck.
Well,
you're spoiled now.
That's true. When you and I would get together more regularly, this was, something that my mind caught up with a lot easier. But, I assure the listener that if you were to rewind this and go back a bit, you'll find probably information that you did not catch the first time. Might take a couple of listens, actually. But anyway, you and I are doing this live, so I don't have the benefit of the rewind.
They're not used to superior information. They used to put this on packaging years ago, superior oats or superior – do you remember – well, not do you remember because I'm speaking back to the 1930s. They stopped by the time World War II came around because of rations, right?
Right.
Rations, you know, the quality, World War II, all it did was adjust people's palate to really inferior quality products, right? Just happy to get sugar of any quality because they told you how to be rationed. Most people don't know that. Just like now, for example, there's a different type. But if you looked at a lot of products, they were called superior this, superior that back in the day. I mean, 100 years ago. And then you have superior information. And they're just not used to superior information. I'm not saying I'm superior. I'm saying the information I provide, oh, heck yeah, it's way superior.
Well, and it's fascinating because the decline of all things is something that we covered also in those earlier Sonic events. And, you know, the decline in quality has, well, you know, stood the same. I mean, really, things are still declining in quality, which I find interesting. Although the speed of information is increased, the quality of it has decreased. There seems to be more of it. It is abundant, but a lot of it is garbage. And, gee, that seems to be just like what the food is, what the products are that people are manufacturing. You know, everything is commensurate with everything else as far as the quality of the time, mostly. Now, that's not to say you can't find things of greater quality. Which was funny because one of the things I want to close out the hour with was a question that was asked about an event that you and I did that's only in my members section on Ocelli.com, I think. And I don't know if you ever took it anywhere else, but we talked about water. Mm. And you gave some really interesting information, which I have tested repeatedly, which is correct, about water and how to handle it so that the quality of it is at its best. Uh-huh. And stuff like that. So now a listener took that and listened and followed the instructions that were given, and, you know, increased the quality of their water by storing it properly and stuff like that. And, they have another question, related to how people freeze food.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Good.
And what you thought about it, because they wanted to know, is there a better way to freeze food considering the fact that, you know, if you freeze chicken twice, it's no good. You know, if you freeze it, thaw it, and freeze it again.
Sure. Well, let me, I see where you're going on the quality of freezing.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a two-stage freezer, which means a two-stage compressor, double door where it goes down to minus 70 or better, which is dangerous, by the way, you're going to get what's called freezer burn.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think below 30 degrees or 20 degrees Fahrenheit, or 18 or 21 degrees Celsius, water starts to evaporate faster than it does at room temperature, or just as fast. So you have all that freezer burn. What I suggest is what I learned, if you're going to freeze anything, you know, if you buy certain quality things in freezer sections, they're called ice glazed. Have you ever seen that before? Like ice glazed chicken parts or whatever?
I don't think I've noticed it, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, let's say when you buy organic chicken breast and it's ice glazed, it'll always taste better and last longer than the ones that are not. What they do, as they freeze them on a conveyor belt, they mist water on it, so it has like an eighth of an inch layer of ice.
Right, okay.
So when that starts to – it increases the shelf life in a freezer that is in the standard minus 20, minus 30. I also learned this really young. We were trout fishing, and one of the guys took a bag and put water in with the fish. I said, why do you do that? He says, when you thaw it out, basically, you know, it's like the day you froze it, basically freezing the fish in a block of ice, right, so okay. It doesn't dry out. So what I suggest – what I do here, for example, sometimes I'll get some organic beef, and you know, $150 for a chunk of beef, you know, is pretty pricey, and you're not going to eat it all. You know, you could try, but you'll be eating beef for quite a few days. You want to quarter it, slice it, and freeze it. What I do is I put it on a cookie sheet and in the freezer, and once it gets hard, after about a few hours, I mist it with some water, mm-hmm. Spray it with a water mister. And then I put it back in, wait 15 minutes, spray it again. And I got a nice ice glaze on it. Then I wrap it in a plastic wrap or wax paper and put it back in the freezer. Because I don't have a two-stage freezer. Mm. It's called a medical freezer. They usually have double doors on them.
Okay.
And there are some restaurants that do have them, by the way. They're very expensive to run and they're very expensive to buy. I have never seen it in anyone's house. I've heard of people wanting to get one after I recommended it, but I have not witnessed one yet. Just like I haven't witnessed, you know how they say it's a man's world? How many times have you witnessed a urinal in someone's house?
Fair enough.
Why do we have to aim? You know, why do we have to put the seat down? If I'm the man of the house, I want a urinal.
Well, I would think it's utility because, you know, you can use that one for both, and therefore, you know, one space, one appliance, basically.
Yeah. I had someone of quote-unquote high net worth. They built the most expensive house in Tucson. His wife was very dominating, and I fixed that real quick by told him put a urinal in. It was an 8,000-square-foot house. It had plenty of bathrooms. Mm-hmm. And one day she pulls me aside and says, I know you convinced him to put this urinal in. What am I supposed to do with it when he's not using it? I said, put a flower vase in it.
Why not?
Because he wasn't used. He got so used to it because they have so many bathrooms. But here's the point is we're not as practical and as utilitarian. In other words, the majority of the people, especially the Americans, freeze a lot of their food.
Right.
If you go to a bona fide – I have like a Chinese refrigerator. You ever go to a Chinese person's house or a Korean – when you open their fridge, it's empty except for some drinks and some condiments. Everything is fresh, mm-hmm. Right? You buy – you go shop. Like, you've ever been to a Chinatown, how crowded it is? It's because people don't store food. They buy it every day, right?
Right.
Right. So if you want to be utilitarian, ice glaze your food. I don't know if there's any YouTube universities on that maybe. Or if it's small enough, just go ahead and pour away. If you have like frozen French fries, it might benefit better, you know, from the spring, or just, you know, don't leave them in the freezer too long. But if you have a precious piece of fish, like on occasion someone would send us salmon from Alaska, okay. A fisherman, mm-hmm. Right? And it comes in a styrofoam box wrapped in Alaskan newspaper with dry ice. You get the picture?
Yep.
Yeah, and if it's a big thing, you know, I don't want to eat salmon for a week, so I ice glaze it. I have a colony of cats I take care of, and I go to Walmart and buy a 10-pound bag of fresh chicken parts for $6, which is a lot cheaper than the canned cat food.
Right.
And I just lay it on a cookie sheet, and I ice glaze and throw it in a bag. It doesn't stick together and all that, and feed them fresh chicken.
Well, it's kind of funny because I actually got my hands on a second freezer, which I keep at a much, you know, I keep it at maximum deep freeze. And
it's
still
not cold enough.
Yeah, well. But,
for freezer burn, you got to get into the minus 60, below minus 50, minus 70 is good. But you know what happens if you touch it at minus 70, it will freeze an eighth of an inch of your skin solid immediately, and it will break off, and you will be left with a wound, right?
Well,
you
see,
have to
that's,
handle things with gloves.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the problems with this is that even though it is not quite at the level you're talking about, you know, the temperature, I do actually have trouble. I got to handle things with gloves or oven mitts.
You use gloves, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
When I take it out of there because – and usually, yeah, there's a pair of gloves next to it because it is that cold. But also, I use that technique you're talking about where if something is contained in ice, it's better off. It doesn't go bad in the freezer, basically. Now, I don't have a lot of food that I store over a long period of time, but it's just because I can't go. I mean, where is anything fresh? I'm in Macon, Georgia, for God's sake. Fresh food. Good
well,
luck.
Also, if you're a hunter, I do recommend freezing to get rid of certain parasites like trichinella and very other worm bodies that might be in the meat.
Right.
For example, the standard high quality sushi is always frozen because there's lots of parasites in fish now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to freeze it because the worms will you know, the certain parasites will perish or die in the freezer.
Well, it's funny. I ended up with the freezer because of somebody having to bring deer meat to me to ask me, you know, what to do because
there you go. I would freeze it.
That's what I did. And I put it into that deep freeze and I said, look, what it's going to do is now make sure you pulled all of the, you know, if you used buckshot or whatever, make sure you pulled it all out of there. But other than that, you know, if you've got those contaminants out of there, this process here will actually destroy a whole lot of other things that you could be worried about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I had that much of the formula in my mind. But I didn't want to answer that question because again, you usually have some ideas here that, that I don't. And again, you did. Now the ice glazing concept, I never noticed that any food was ice glazed in the, markets, you know, but doing it at home. Yeah, I do that at home. So, okay. Same kind of thing.
Yeah, certain high quality, products are that are come frozen and state they're ice glazed. So okay. You don't get freezer burn.
Well, and see, that's the thing is I never noticed it, but you know, fact is that I treat the food that way, especially, I mean, I don't treat every piece of chicken that way. Some of them it's like, listen, I'm just going to use this soon. But if it's something that is, you know, organic and therefore was expensive and, you know, maybe came fresh from a farm, that's exactly how I handle it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, Greek, and get into some other things. Now, this next hour might be, you know, I don't know how you want to go. We'll see. But anyway, mm-hmm. I'll be right back.
I'll go like I've always been going. So, okay, we'll see you on the other side.
Exactly. Anyway, stick around. I'll be right back with the Greek on Ocelli.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Uncle, I'll bet you remember the time when Benjamin Fulford said that the Asian Secret Society was going to dispatch ninjas to take out the Illuminati to change the entire world for the better.
That is never gonna happen. That never did.
It never did, did it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, because there's a lot of false promises.
It's fools?
I can't say more.
We better not say and be polite, but there are no false promises at the Ocelli.com radio network.
That's exactly it. Not. It's truth, the point, right to the point. And this is what I like. Straight to the point.
Ocelli.
Ocelli.com.
Listen now. local. Do you remember that time when Benjamin Fulford said that an Asian secret society was going to dispatch ninjas to take down the Illuminati?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, in the cartoon.
Yeah, did that ever work out too good?
No.
It didn't, did it?
Didn't work.
But here on Ocelli.com Radio Network, things work out a bit better, don't they?
Much better.
Much better.
I mean, it's clearer in understanding about the programs. The programs are much clearer. Getting live people into it, they really have a good conversation going.
Much better.
Much better scene.
I say forget Benjamin Fulford and his ninjas and listen to the Ocelli.com Radio Network.
I agree. It's straight to the point.
Straight talk.
And I like that idea.
Ocelli.com.
Uncle, do you remember that time when the year 2012 was going to create the apocalypse, end of the world?
Right. And it thought it would come to the end.
Did it ever end up that way?
No.
Yeah.
Like we say, the only way it will end is when he is ready for to end. That's how it is.
So if you want the real truth about 2012, you better listen to the Ocelli.com Radio Network.
Radio Podcast.com.
Yeah, forget it's John Cusack.
John Cusack
doesn't know what he's talking about.
Know what he's talking actually about. Correct.
But we here at the Ocelli Radio Network sure do.
Do you sure understand and understand where it's actually coming from?
Ocelli.com.
The second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now, and of course this is a unique show because I have the Greek with me, and it is a rare occurrence now. It used to be a much more regular sonic occurrence when we did Ocelli and the Greek and then rebooted the show briefly, kind of did a part two and ended it. And I'll tell you, it's still relevant, still interesting. We're referencing a lot of it tonight because, the majority of any questions you might have were probably already answered 5 years ago by anybody's reckoning. So there you go. But it is interesting to look at the world around us, and I want to address something and just kick it over to you, and then you can go in any direction you want. But this again is all from me this time, not the listener, or listeners who have contacted me and asked me various questions. But the thing is, I do note that there is a change in these past few years, and I didn't quite articulate it properly in the first hour when I was talking about certain things, and is it a linguistic issue, is it a communication issue, and of course, cosmic censorship is still in play. But there's something else beginning to happen which is different and is slowly but surely having the knob turned up, if it were volume on an amplifier, Greek. And that is this, I call it the agitated apathy, where, yes, indeed, we're hearing again, and this is everything is a regurgitation of something from before. Civil War 2.0 is coming, get ready. Tension between people has increased noticeably. In the past few years, it is getting more confused, okay, more incoherent, and yet people are aggravated. Now, the laziness of most people, I think, is what is preventing them from doing a lot more damage to their neighbors than they already do. I think that is one of the key factors that is preventing some bloodshed, but I think the right push, you know, you like to mention movies? Well, remember the Joker character, right? In the Christopher Nolan Batman, who said, you know, everybody's on the edge and all they need is one good push. I think people are beginning to emotionally and psychologically, seemingly, walk closer and closer to that edge where that push is not going to require much effort for them to jump over the cliff. And that cliff, not even a jump, they're just going to fall off of it, really. And I think it is because they are insisting on being aggravated, agitated, and you know, some people say it's mind control, but it seems to be a general consensus of hostility that is growing. Now, we're not at an extreme level, because I don't believe, you know, the things that they try to promote via the different entertainment outlets that they call news. Okay, half the country was not on fire, even when they were trying to show us half the country was on fire. That wasn't true. But the idea, the tension, the strife, if you will, that is being promoted, I think is succeeding, sure. But there's something else at play here. I think hostility is being, again, slowly turned up, much like that boiling frog. I don't think anybody's going to jump out of it, but eventually things are going to get cooking. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, and no, you haven't seen, if you think you've seen it, you haven't seen anything yet. This is like the small little hump in the roller coaster ride. You know, when they send you out of the cabin or wherever, you load up into the cart. What do most people have in common is they take up space and they give off heat, right? So they're space heaters. I'm not against the space heater liquidation. If you told me the Earth's population was reduced down to 100 people, I'd be fine. But the problem, or if you left it as it is, it's still fine. Why? It's the quality of the people, mm-hmm. right? So let's say you brought down the world's population to 100 people. If you have one attorney, a priest, a rabbi, and a doctor, that's, you know, these are standard trained, you're going to be exactly where you are right now in 40 years. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You haven't done anything, right? You can take the 7 or 8 billion people and upgrade them, but the thing is, I believe that they're irreparable at this point. Mm-hmm. It's not a direct condemnation. It's a tangential condemnation. You know how a car, when it's totaled, they give it a salvage title. You could still rebuild it. I'm not talking like that. I'm speaking on they're not fixable, because it's divinely, they've been divinely altered. Now, that's the divine economy talk, but yeah, they're just taking up space. You got to realize the gods are numerologists and numerics and mathematicians and arithmeticians and mathematicians. Mm-hmm. They rely heavily on accounting and numbers. So, you know, why are there so many stupid people in the world and ignorant and apathetic? It's because of the numbers. The quality aspect that I'm speaking of is different. Like, for example, you're not going to meet people that have honor, dignity, lawfulness, and morality mm-hmm. anymore.
Right.
And if you don't have that, to me, you're already dead. You know, scripture talks about that. You know, why don't you let the dead bury the dead? Right?
Right.
So, I'm in total horror and shock when I leave, you know, where I live, the dwelling, and go out in public. It doesn't matter where I go. I'm in horror and shock by looking at people, you know, how they behave to each other and not how they behave to me. I try to be a silent bystander. Mm-hmm. It's just an absolute horror. And it doesn't get any better, you know, going from one country to another. So what I'm trying to say is, space heater liquidation will not begin until the late 2020s in earnest, but you're going to have some of it now. And what does that have to do with your question? Not much, but this is what I can't answer it directly, because when I study and think, I do it in 10-year, 100-year, and 1,000-year swaths. Mm-hmm. So when you say you've noticed recently, that's irrelevant. The reason why I say it's irrelevant is because this is how people were 2 or 3,000 years ago. Not much has changed.
Right. Well, fair enough. And me taking notice of it doesn't necessarily mean that that's when it started. I'm sure that we are talking about a 10-year time period here, though, where
more than – well, let's not forget – let's just say the 10-year time period is not really relevant when you're doing the general perspective, because remember, at one point mm-hmm. when the people – they will not say they're looking for divine help, but they will sure fall for it when it's offered. Mm-hmm. They will be promised a golden age, that if they do these things, we'll put humanity on a new foot, and it will last for 1,000 years, let's say. They may not say that exactly, but a new golden age. And they're all going to fall for it, right. You see. So when you say 10 years, it's not really relevant when these things begin, because now everything will be wiped and they'll look ahead. In other words, I haven't said this publicly before, I might as well. You know, a year zero is going to be declared in the near future. Let me say that again. Well, I don't have to say it again. You heard me, right?
Oh, I heard you. I heard you.
Think about what that means.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, you have to think about it before you answer it, right? Remember, put your mind in motion before you put your mouth in motion. Let me just say, I've never said this before. There's lots of stuff I haven't said, and I gotta hold on. Oh, this will be ready in a few years. But, yeah, declaration of year zero coming up. Not next year. I can't give you a date, but in the 2025, 2026, 2027 period, to declare a year zero is a big, big deal, isn't it?
Well, I'm wondering if that is only going to be a small part of a customary reset.
Sure, changing the times, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think probably, even though it's kind of a shocking statement you're making, to some people, I think that that's going to be the least shocking thing about that time period.
Well, it'll be least shocking because it'll accommodate the rest of the ideology that they've already absorbed.
Right. See, and that's the weird thing. I entered the last question, by the way, because I just clicked over to my email, and I see that a listener who asked a question is listening right now. So it's kind of an absurd question in my mind, but I'm going to ask it anyway and let you deal with it. Okay? They reference the fact that I have often said I don't see why it is. You know, people have tried to make out Barack Obama to be an antichrist, right? To be an antichrist, not the antichrist. But some people, the antichrist, okay? And this concept of the antichrist is pretty fascinating to me because I read it differently than a lot of other people do, but we'll put that aside.
Well, let's just use this maxim.
Okay.
Meaning something you should know, even though it's not easily written, or you should know. Mm-hmm. Whenever you borrow a term or a concept from a particular source, you must always look for the definition of that term or concept within that source. It's usually given.
Yeah.
So when you bring up Antichrist, that's in the biblical source material. So the biblical source material plenty well defines who and what and where and the identity of the Antichrist. So putting that identity on Obama or what have you, does not fit the source. So now you don't have a, in other words, that's where the people are operating without license and without right, right? In other words, uh-huh. If you don't exhaust the source that you obtained the term or concept from, you are now unlawful in your application of the term.
Mm. No, I understand. But there's something further in this question, which is related to our current times as opposed to, you know, because Obama's not in office at the moment. So the thing is, when I look at this idea that there is this ID concept to what's going on regarding medical and all that, they wanted me to ask you about, you know, what is the reality of the possibility that we're looking at the rise of that figure now, because it makes sense with the idea that you're now going to have to comport with certain things in order to trade. You're definitely looking at somebody who speaks out of two sides of their mouth, very much like is described in the biblical concept. Anyway, not necessarily the text.
All right, let me just interject this.
Yeah.
The Antichrist will be an apolitical figure in a political a position of political power, but he will be apolitical. Apolitical, meaning not of the systems that you're used to seeing someone stand amongst. You know, he will be fluid and free to move in those systems. In other words, the UN, national capital, you know, federal capital, high corporate positions, and all that. He'll be moving in and out of that, but he'll be apolitical. Right now, he's about 22, 23. Actually, he was born a couple of weeks ago. Around 1998, he's of Assyrian, A-S-S-Y-R-I-A-N, descent, but he will claim to be Judean. Mm-hmm. That's why I tell people, don't even bother reading the Bible because you're not going to understand anything in it. I'm not telling people not to read the Bible because, you know, that would be suggesting they stay away from high source content material, right? Because it's got sources in it as well. But in other words, if you listen to what I say when I say that, don't even bother reading the Bible because you're not going to understand anything in it, meaning you have to approach it with reading comprehension. Mm-hmm. So, and one thing that is really off limits to most people and hidden in plain sight is what's called the Book of Revelation. Mm-hmm. If you're a Christian and you could read the Book of Revelation five times a day, every day for 50 years, you're not going to understand anything past the word the, right? If you subscribe to any religion. Because it's coming from a different level. So in that Book of Revelation, it states that beware of those who claim to be Jews in the King James, and are not, right? And people use that on all kinds of however they want to use it.
Right.
But it doesn't say that. It's Judeans. So that Book of Revelation is very specific to identifying many things, star charts, how the earth, what the earth is really is about, and what mankind's going to get into.
The lawful time period that these events will occur.
It's about divine law. Mm-hmm. And you got to understand, when you're getting the King James Bible, someone posted a video recently I thought was funny to me. And it's basically like reading a 12-year-old's book report on the Bible.
Okay.
There's no I have a King James. It's a doorstop. The New Testament is very difficult to get into because it was written in Aramaic, then 100 years later in Greek, then into Latin, and the people who translated into King James wanted a Greek version. They couldn't find it, so they took the Latin, translated it back into Greek, and then translated that into English. So it's a copy of a copy of a copy. So you have to understand the law to put the things in the right perspective, and you have to understand Aramaic. There's no source online that I can cite about doing that. You're going to have to find someone who is of Assyrian descent, and you're going to have to go back and look at certain things. But let's just not get on that topic. But let's just state things that we can factually attest to based on studying the source with comprehension.
Okay, the sticking point of the question, though, is actually about Donald Trump, because he would be apolitical and seem to share some of the characteristics.
But he's not of Assyrian descent, and he doesn't claim to be of Judean.
There you have a differentiation right there. So I just want to make that clear that I asked the question. And I'd like you to also.
And he's not 23 years old.
No, certainly not. I'd like you to roll into that, though, with the question asked in the chat room while you do this explanation, if you don't mind. Let me see here. What's going to be the events leading up to year zero is the question in the chat room. Yeah. Go ahead.
More of the same of what you see now, just stressing the human condition, which you can take a lot of stress. In other words, it's going to get to the point where you're going to start killing. We've discussed this 5 years ago. I said people are going to start killing each other for no reason. Look at various agendas that are going to be put in place that might take some people by surprise, but they're going to be willing. Everyone's going to be willing to go for it. Like one of them is the pedophilia agenda. The other one, these are agendas that have, besides the homosexuality and other things that have been put out, but the pedophilia, which has already been put out big time, mm-hmm. and pederasty and all that, into the cannibalism. Like, for example, there's no such thing as laboratory meat. You know, they want to feed people laboratory. There's no such thing. It's reprocessed human, whatever you want to call it. There's no such thing as laboratory meat. So the cannibalism agenda, on and on and on. But what there around year zero, there's going to be a turnaround and using, let's say, a more draconian approach or hard-handed approach to old classical law form overused. You know, what I mean by that is law is good like water is good, you know, but what you can drown in water. You can drown people in good laws, mm-hmm. right?
Okay.
So, you're going to see these agendas coming around. I will also restate what I've been stating for past two decades, is you're going to see lack of adherence as well as abandonment of what are the major religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. People are going to be walking away from that, and they're going to be walking away for many reasons, right?
Well, statistically, that's happening now.
Right, but it's going to be on the increase, and in within a year or two, it's going to be pretty major increase of that.
So, for lack of a better term, we're going to see a noticeable exodus from.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, to the point where there's a place called the Limelight on Sixth Avenue in Manhattan. I know guys started it years ago. It was an old church, and they turned it into a disco.
Great club, actually. Not just a disco, but they used to. Metalhead. So
rent it out, and then you could have bands play there.
You sure
like
could. Uh huh. But
yeah, I don't know if it's still around. I think it's 16th Street and 6th Avenue.
Yeah, it was a church before that, but I remember it well in the 90s. Played there even once.
Yeah, they're going to turn the Vatican into that'd make a great disco.
Oh, imagine the possibilities there. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I could go. I mean, so you're going to see a lot of the ancient stuff that you've never, so ancient and so hidden that you don't know about it, revived. And you know, when I say you, meaning the public at large will not know it's a revival. They'll think it's something new.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you know about ancient culture? Like the real quirky stuff, you know, like real odd customs and real odd religions, especially based around not the divine, what people call divine feminine, but certain goddess religions, right?
Right. I always find that rather funny, by the way. The people that tell me they ascribe to the feminine goddesses, and I'm like, yeah, you don't know.
Which one?
You don't know who you're talking to, apparently, because
they each have a corresponding demon, like the Shiva you read about in the Hindu Puranas, and that's a very formative, constructive goddess, but she has a counterpart demon that's also named Shiva, right? That's a destroyer.
Well, but so, they all have that counterbalance aspect to them. That, I mean, justice herself is...
Even Yahweh has a destroyer.
Right, of course.
But he sends a destroying angel down, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, they all have the counter, right? And the funny thing is the intent. They believe that they're tapping into an intent, which is, you know, this divine, warm, you know, fuzzy... positive, you know, oh, would never do any harm. And I'm like, wow, you just really have
idea. Well, it's the emotion. It's it's like the candies, you know, what is those chocolate candies with a hard shell on them so you don't get it all over your hands.
Yeah, right.
they take these demonic practices and ideologies and they coat them so it just melts in your mouth, not in your hand kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't know what they're swallowing, you know.
No, I see that, and it's just so strange. And anyway, back to what we're talking about here, which is, you know, where we're going in the next few years.
More of the same.
More of the same.
But okay. But not as such, meaning it doesn't necessarily have to be a plandemic. You will have the corresponding degradation. In other words, you know, when you hear about the disasters we've spoken about in the past that you read about in biblical terms,
mm-hmm.
the asteroids and the famines and the plagues and all that stuff, mm-hmm. That's all ready to go. It's just that it's not ready to go until the morality, the lawfulness, honor, and dignity of mankind goes lower. It has to go a little bit lower. And one way to judge whether honor, dignity, lawfulness, and morality are on the rise or on the descend is to see people's desire to seek the truth. It sounds kind of, I'm not being sarcastic. So the less people desire to learn or seek what's true, the easier their morality, honor, dignity, and lawfulness drops. The more they seek the truth, the level of honor, dignity, morality, and lawfulness raises.
Mm-hmm.
When I say the truth, I mean the real objectifiable truth.
Well,
so what do you think? I mean, that's pretty easy to predict. So if the people start seeking the truth less and less, guess what's going to happen to morality, honor, dignity, and lawfulness?
Well, I think
it's going to go down.
Well, I think, but that's not coming in the future.
No,
right now.
It's coming. In other words, I gave the example of laboratory meat. Do you think they're actually going to make meat in the laboratory? It's just like genetically modified organisms. They don't know what they're doing. What they do is they find similar organisms and they modify them by applying toxins, right? Well, here's an example. When you hear about, let's say, genetically modified oranges, You know, you have an orange tree of various types of oranges, you know. I mean, not just the orange fruit. There's many types, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's such thing as a decorative orange tree, and I have firsthand knowledge of that. I was in the Seagram's building in Manhattan once, and they had an orange tree in there. I picked an orange off a tree to open, and it was just completely
nothing. Greek. You got to watch your electronic interference there.
It was a decorative plant. Now, mm-hmm. the insects are not going to attack a decorative orange plant like they would one that's has a nutrition-bearing, you know, flesh inside the orange.
Right.
So they're just cross-pollinating and doing all that other stuff. So when you hear genetically modified crops, this is an experiment some people are reporting on. You know, when you buy the seeds for that are genetically modified, that they don't produce seeds. You have to buy more seed.
Terminator seeds,
Yes, but if you can keep certain perennials alive, meaning ones that – I think I'm not using the right term there. The plants that can go beyond 1 year, they will again sprout seed. So you have to be very patient. Mm-hmm. But it's not a way of doing it, though. It's not conducive because you end up losing a year. It's an interruption in the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I would stress I'm not going to stress, but let's really underscore in air quotes the cannibalism agenda, right?
Okay.
And I'm not talking about – like when the Supreme Court did Roe versus Wade, the abortion thing,
mm-hmm.
that was not because of women's rights. They don't care. The rights is a terrible thing to entertain. That's so they can supply their friends with a steady supply of baby parts.
Well, and in fairness, look, the truth about that, when it comes to, well, you know, that denies a woman, that's not true at all. Here's the reality of that.
They don't care about rights.
If you have enough, and the other thing is those that are striking it down, if you have enough money, guess what? You don't have to worry about that. It's a private procedure between a doctor and a woman. Done.
Yes, but my point is when it becomes public like that, it's code.
Yeah, I understand, but I'm just saying that
code, you know,
it's irrelevant on both counts. The funny thing.
Yes. But watch out for stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they tell you abortion's okay, it's not because of women's rights. It's because they have friends, you know, they take marching orders. And the Supreme Court, by the way, is not a court of record. It's actually pretty low. It's an appeals court. It always has to go back to the district court or a court of record. So, but it's all part of the religion. I mean, it's pretty sick if you ask me. So all of these things is who benefits. In other words, quo bono, right? Quo bono in Latin.
Quo bono, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like if you look at the nuke they dropped on Lebanon a month or two ago, if you want to know who dropped it. Who is from a brand name perspective? It was the French. Well, how do I know? Well, because the French leadership is sticking their nose way deep into Lebanon since that happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, not that there really is a French government, but the brand known as France is moving in. Do you see what I mean?
Right. Well, and that brand functions on this concept of control and destruction of colonies. So if you look back at the history of them attempting to insert themselves into the Middle East, it makes perfect sense. Now, I don't know about the evidence for that, to be honest with you. I haven't seen the evidence for it. When I saw it, it certainly looked like not quite a nuclear explosion as I've seen it on film before,
right.
But it looked like something else. And
well, the thing about calling it a nuke is based on the yield. It's very easy.
Okay.
There's a pact, an unwritten pact for the past 40 years or 50 years to not do anything atmospheric anymore.
Right.
You know, the 20,000 nuclear experiments, 90% of them are underground. So that's how they use them. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're not supposed to detonate on the surface because it's too obvious. You have the double flash, right?
Right.
You have the detonation and then the reaction. So they're always used underground. But the way you figure that out is based on the immediacy of the environmental reaction.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I call it because it's very inexpensive to do. But now that they've got people used to the biologicals, I think the last time we spoke in what's called January, and you brought up the possibility of war starting because of Soleimani being killed by intelligence agencies to spark off a war, let's say, I said no. I said the wars are going to be done using biologicals. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do, because what happened there seemed to me to be exactly the kind of thing that usually starts a conflict.
But it didn't.
Surprisingly to me, it did not. And I think the reason was that it couldn't be sold to whoever makes that decision that this was a good idea at the time.
Right. And the only people who can defeat the Persians are the Greeks, and the Greeks are in no situation to fight the Persians.
No, they have no, they're, that's impossible at the moment. So.
That's not going to happen. So it's not going to happen. It's very easy. Just look at what happened before.
Well, and so the other relevant thing, hang on one second. The other relevant thing that you brought up at that time when we talked about that situation, because I do have a memory, is that, you know, you said it was the wrong time of year. And, you know what? Using that idea and taking a look at the time of year and what it is that you naturally do in an agrarian, correct. That's the word I was trying to get out. In an agrarian sense. Yeah, you're supposed to be harvesting, guess what, around now.
Harvest is now, but the winter is transition. The harvest is now, the fall, correct?
Right.
Winter is transition. In the winter, you're done with your harvest. You have your winter crop, your winter wheat, winter rye going, and you might – that's when you build your barn, you fix your wagon, or go on a long trip.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand, but when you take that
and
you apply
figuratively.
It. No, I get it. That's what I was going to say, is when you apply that figuratively to what's going on, of course there was going to be no war then. That would not have been the time to harvest this kind of thing. I think what we have seen is an incremental increase again in that tension across the board. I don't see anywhere where, you know, things are getting more peaceful, and I don't care about that business deal again that they made in the Middle East. That is irrelevant. It's just another business deal. Okay.
Well, it's a historical, you know, you have fake news. What about fake history? If the news are fake, right, isn't the history a compilation of news?
Well, on one level it is, but it is also the record that is recorded by individuals. When you look at the concept of historiography, it is more than that. But indeed, the individuals who write those histories do it with particular agendas, and I don't care if you're talking about Josephus or whoever the hell is keeping track of it at the Pentagon at the moment. There is a reasoning for why the history is written the way it is. It is always subject to revision, and quite frankly, there is the concept of the need for revisionism on all of these histories, which, I agree to it. There are things which are not known at the time of the history that become known later. This is why, by the way, the French had the concept of perspective, that you had to have 75 years between a historical event before you got a realistic writing about it. You know, and
in ancient tradition, it was 100. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's my next point, is that in ancient tradition, the reason why they see histories written 100 years after the fact is because that's the way it was done. You know, that's why I mentioned Josephus there and people like that. Because sometimes they were writing about things that had happened a century before, and people say, well, how do they know about – well, that is the way history was written. So you have to look at the process by which the history is written also. And again, subject to revision at all times. So, no, I'm aware of all this. What I want to get back to this thing about Lebanon, though, before we run out of time, because that was the final question I wanted to ask you, because you and I didn't get to speak around that time. It has fallen out of the headlines. There's no news about it, basically.
Right.
But you do note that the French definitely got involved in investigation, and that is a key thing. Whenever you take note of who gets involved in an investigation after a major event, that's usually the person that's responsible for at least part of that major event.
That's right.
Yeah. So I want to get into this a little more, though, because Lebanon is a little more significant than the modern concept of what people say about it. You know, I mean, we know about the history and, the different conflicts and, oh, well, they're the people behind Hezbollah and blah, blah, blah. And it was just a government screw up here. I found that hilarious, by the way, that it's just, you know, the government has become so ineffectual that this is what happened accidentally. I can't quite buy that.
Well, forget about when you say government, use the word administration, which is just like a traffic cop, let's say, or something, you know, keeps things moving.
Okay.
Because there there is no government as you're taught in civics, you know, if you are old enough to have taken that class, which they don't teach anymore.
Which I am, but yeah, I know what you mean.
What you will be looking at in the future is a decentralized power base between southern Iraq, like what would be the Arabian Sea there, like the land of Ur, if that rings a bell for anyone. Mm-hmm. Southern Iraq, like south of Babylon to Babylon, Jerusalem, and the Levant of Lebanon. Those three areas are going to be a decentralized power base. In other words, there's going to be a lot of action, both overt and covert, in those parts of the world, which right now are very still, except for the Lebanon condition that we, you know, just talked about.
Right. No, that's
but
the thing.
Jerusalem is another major point. And all of this is based on divine consideration, not secular stuff that you see.
Well, let me ask you why. Because the way I see it is, you know, is it just related to the fact that these are historically relevant spots on the ancient map? Okay. And that's
it. They were chosen a very, very long time ago, prehistorical.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, though. Why? I've always wondered this, by the way. Why?
Center mass. If you look at the map of the world and you do a cross-section, you know, especially the flat maps that go against the wall,
mm-hmm.
just do a cross-section. The major mass is Asia, Africa, and Europe. They're all connected except for various canals. If you do an X through them, you know, from the top right Russia to the south bottom left of Africa, top left of Europe to the bottom right of India, you'll see that X crosses right in the middle of those three places. It's also prophetic as well.
Mm. Point of convergence, though, we're at center mass based on the land mass that was known at that
time. Asia, Africa, which is the majority of the Earth, yeah.
Yeah, okay. No, fair enough. That's simple questions.
Well, in essence, I get it from prophecy, biblical prophecy,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, there are many other prophetic writings and writs. I call them holy writs of the world that are all in – they can be harmonized. But the reason I mention the biblical narrative is because it gives the most information.
Mm-hmm. Well, indeed, allegedly in history, previous to this, you have many other seemingly divinely inspired texts that did contain some of this information as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if it's a lack of preservation or if it's a lack of information that was available to previous peoples or not, because that's a good question, I think. You know,
it's not that it's never available. Yes, it can be. You know, having a book even 200 years ago was very rare. Like if you went into a small town, mm-hmm. what's going on here? You know, they'll say, oh, well, we have a butcher and a baker and this guy here lives across the street. He has a book. Wow. He owns a book. Wow. I mean, that's how rare they were at one point. Right.
Right.
But on the other hand, you know, if you had a secret and you wanted to make sure it was kept secret, you make a million copies and put it in the public library. And no one will ever find out.
This is true. This is true. So, who even knows what a library is among people that are younger than us, Greek, honestly?
So, here's the thing. I wouldn't focus at all on the things that people tend to focus on. Do the opposite and you'll be better off. You should always increase, you know, your honor, dignity, lawfulness, and morality, but also increase the level of food, clothing, and shelter. There's a really great future that no one knows anything about that's coming. I mean, no one meaning the corporate no one. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of people that do know, but not that many, meaning they're in the hundreds or a few thousand that know what's coming. And it's going to be wonderful, and it's going to be such a wonderful surprise that I think that all of this crap, you know, recent or not, will be forgotten.
Right, right. Well, you know, and here we are. Like I say, I do feel as though this is an interesting time period because the transition will be evident within the next few years. You know, I wonder about the difficulty of the road ahead.
It'll get very difficult because it's going to test the level of tolerance or the robustness of the human, both spiritual and physical. The thing is, humanity is both weak spiritually and both physically weak as well right now. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be pushed to the limit and most will not make it. When I say most will not make it in this, what we call reality now, you know, the reality that's set up by the corporations, the state, the secret societies, the religions, your education system, all that. You're in very bad shape, but you're resilient enough ultimately. And you have friends in high places that will eventually help the general humanity. Mm. You know, 99.9% of the people are going to come out fine on the other side in the real reality, which is the reality of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Here's the interesting thing. It's all about raising, when I say honor, dignity, lawfulness, and morality, that's a consciousness thing, mm-hmm. It's what happens in your heart and your soul and your mind, which is your spirit, and that affects your soul, your metabolism. So if you read ancient texts, especially the biblical text, what people don't understand is that it's one cohesive document. There's no old and new, and it seems limiting because of the quote-unquote laws. But once you do those laws, there are disciplines that raise your consciousness once you do them. It's kind of like the wax-on, wax-off Karate Kid. He didn't understand what that whole discipline was about until he was made aware of what the discipline was about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and here's something that I've been discussing more in private. I call it the existential threat to the universe. And what I mean by that, I'll preface this way. Let's just follow this scenario. One day, everyone goes outside, no matter where you are in the world, and you see these huge spaceships, right? Mm-hmm. And scares humanity so much that all the countries put down their weapons and they stop fighting and they get into peace agreements.
Independence Day scenario again, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, a week after that, the ships fire on the Earth and kill everyone on the Earth except for one guy. And he says, well, you guys, they present themselves. And the guy says, why did you kill us? We made peace on Earth. He says, yeah, well, we made you to be a warlike race so we can take you and bring you out here into the universe and fight wars with us. But since you wanted peace, we had no use for you, so we wiped you out.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you read and where do you not read that the gods are not warlike? They're always warlike. I am suggesting that we are being bred spiritually as larva goes to the next metamorphosis, what I call resurrection, reincarnation, what have you, the next level or the afterlife, let's say, to be a warrior class to protect this universe as we can conceive it, mm-hmm. from an existential threat of beings that are not created and are not gods and are not human. They are a totally different life form. And if you got this information now, it would just scare the pittance out of you. But you cannot get the briefing on this until you go to the next level. In other words, until you get into what's called the afterlife.
Well, right.
So I'll end with that, because that's a real fantastic approach to what all this means. But you've got to – you know why I said that? Because no one else is. So.
No, and fair enough. I recently slipped on a show and because I was asked about prayer, basically. And
okay, stop right there. Prayer – stop using the word prayer because it evokes religious sentiment, which could be negative in many cases. You know what prayer really is?
Go ahead.
Telepathy. Anyway,
well,
go ahead. Just think about that.
True. But
you're practicing telepathy.
I interpreted it to that level and take, look, I take people's words and I have to reinterpret them because they use very blunt instruments and prayer is a blunt word. It evokes a whole bunch of connotations that don't belong to it. But in the practice that a lot of people would understand as prayer, I know who I'm talking to. and I know I'm talking to the gods of war. And I said that, and, you know, I got a little bit of crap for it. Well, what do you mean, of the ancient pantheon, these people, but no.
Well, they're God, actually.
Right.
that would be Yahweh. No one uses that term. And that term has been hijacked, and that name has been hijacked.
Which is why I don't use it. I don't use it. But the thing is, I also know.
The aspect of telepathy, depending on which circles you roll in, is valid or invalid, but I believe is more accurate than saying prayer.
But I know my telepathy is going to the gods, plural.
Correct.
Okay. And I also know that I am passing whatever it is I can pass to them. I know that I am definitely addressing the gods of war. I know this. And
let me put it this way. If you're not a god of war, you're not going to be around.
Well, there you have it.
Because there is a war of the gods also.
Yes.
Which is... That's the divine economics concept. Economics just means rules of the house. It goes beyond finances. So, you know, typically in academic circles, you know, especially in the 19th century, if you look at certain treatises, the economy of such and such, it meant how that culture functioned. So what I would suggest is that increasing one's consciousness, and I don't mean in the New Age. The New Agers bring up the context and the subject matter, but they fall flat on their faces when they try to resolve it in any rational way. You know, I say the New Age movement at large. Mm-hmm. Right. But you'll notice in the New Age movement, they talk a lot about consciousness, right? And that's what this all is about, because that comes first. You know, the ether, mm-hmm. consciousness, the mind, is the station from which everything else emanates from.
Right.
And that is one based on a form of aggression that cannot be understood right now. It's a form of dynamics that cannot be understood or comprehended right now. But it doesn't mean that you can't lean on the subject matter in the way that it's been presented for thousands of years. And it's not the way that people think about it now.
No, and it's certainly not this very... I don't know what to call it. Again, the New Ager sort of generality that you see regarding this. There is indeed a way to elevate consciousness, and you already spoke to that. It is through the actions.
Through honor, dignity, morality, and right. lawfulness.
Right. Right. And that is not, you know, necessarily easily achieved. It is a bit of work if you're accustomed to the customs. So,
well, you can't do it without knowledge.
True.
The martial art, for example, and I recently been on Skype calls talk about martial arts, and a lot of the things that you do here are true, but you have to practice all of your waking hours, 12 to 15 hours a day, every day, for a few years to be able to walk through a wall. But the moment you walk through the wall and say you've achieved it and stop practicing for 3 days, you can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so consciousness is on the same thing. It's something that you adapt, like a high operating system where it becomes natural. You don't have to think about it because, you know, it resolves itself through your actions. But without knowledge, you have nothing to resolve. Most people don't know what lawfulness is. And mm-hmm. there's no need for it because they forfeited their position to. In other words, the condition of the earth, humans are a commodity. Mm-hmm. Right? You're no longer men and women. And commodities like doorknobs, nails, bananas, whatever, right, mm-hmm. Don't require knowing the law because they're just a commodity. So, yeah. When you break out of that, you'll realize, here's an example. You could look up a sovereign state, which is neither sovereign nor a state, like the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor does it have reserves.
Right.
A sovereign state is what everyone in the UN is, or most countries now are. And it's a juridical, it's a political juridical fiction, right? It's a corporate, meaning it's a corporate entity, right? And that has owners and shareholders that have everyone, you know, subscribe to that system. But if you look at all of the laws, they've left all of the lawful laws in place, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're almost, you know, the people who own the world or think they do or it's been granted to them to be in that position, like to have fun also. They eventually do like to see some people that will go and approach what's lawful and present it if they need to. The pawns don't. Like if you run into a regular attorney or a doctor or a cop or a priest and you bring up what's lawful, they're going to think you're crazy. Mm-hmm. But as you go higher and higher and higher, in private, never in public, they do honor that. Meaning the people, you know, as you go up the rung. So if you bring up lawfulness or what's right or what's in the law, for example, in the American laws or whatever law, you know, whatever country you're in, they've still left laws in there that are pretty good. And actually, you'll notice the things that people are quote unquote charged with really doesn't apply to them based on definition. Mm-hmm. But you, if you're finding yourself in trouble, you're dealing with too low on the totem pole, which I call the pawns. And just to interject, one of the things, one of the reasons they did the pandemic with the virus thing, because I think I've talked privately that contagions are only contagion. You know, we've talked on the container, nothing goes in or out of the body, right? Your body has to reproduce it through induction.
Right.
And there's plenty written about this. It's just not acknowledged as it should be. In other words, if you have a pandemic or a disease that's contagious going around, you have to have the same format as the person who is carrying it to be subject to that infection. If you change the way you're formatted, let's say if I have something called or anybody can make aqueous argentum, which is a silver solution, or even soda. Mm-hmm. If you take soda, you know, baking soda and water, anything, if you have a certain diet, right? You will not be subject to that infection unless it's extremely virulent, like the type that if you contract, it kills you in a few hours. That's different. So the reason why they were able to pull this off as they did is because you have these medical practitioners, by the way. They get a doctor's degree and they get a state license and they open up a local practicing clinic, right? You've seen them all over the place all your life. And their whole mode is to – they don't know what they want to do. They have no inspiration, so they just become a doctor. And they know that if they fill up their office with appointments, they get $150 to $500 per head per day, and it's easy money. And occasionally, if they can't diagnose someone, to write a prescription because that's all they can do – is they say, oh, you need to find a specialist because you have some viral infection.
Mm-hmm.
And they brush off people that they can't diagnose as having a viral infection. And they've been doing this now for almost 30 years, and people have been buying it, right? Mm-hmm. So you can have something that's completely, you know, very simple, allergic, you know, because of toxin or whatever, and they tell you it's a viral infection. Oh, and everybody agrees. So they created fertile ground for the virus to be the new boogeyman based on these worthless medical practitioners known as, you know, local doctors.
Well, fair enough. Believe it or not, we're almost out of time here. And
I believe it.
I know you don't mean to say that there is not a actual contagion.
It is, but it is not. It is not as described. Yeah,
not as described.
And the
described,
way that the contagion. Right. Let's just put it this way, and this is for sure. It's never some vial in a lab or whatever. The people that actually know how to do it are mostly dead. They kind of sequestered the information 100 years ago. And the way you create a pandemic has nothing to do with laboratories with frozen samples, and I'm not going to discuss that publicly ever.
Well, there you have it. And the Greek, I say again, always unique. And I'm not just trying to rhyme, my friend, but this was a fascinating 2 hours, and I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me, because a lot of information has been packed into these 2 hours. So anyway, guys, I am Merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Please support the network. What else can I say? I'm not a good pitch man, but if you gained something from this, it would be behoove you to exchange something for it on occasion. Anyway, have a good night.